a great honor to stand, especially on the shoulders of giants and the women that have come before me, the Alaska Native women that have come before me.
The legislature swears in Bethel's new state representative. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 9th. Good evening, I'm Rachel Waldholtz. Also tonight, a new bill would declare a state of emergency for Native languages.
It is hard for us to hear, and I assure you the reason I share it is not to make anyone feel guilty, but this testimony must include the suffering of our elders and ancestors.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting March 13th and 14th starting at 8:30 a.m. at Dolly's Hall in Naknek. More at 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Tiffany Zilkuski took the oath of office today to become the new state representative for Alaska's 38th district, which includes Bethel. Zilkuski says she'll get to work immediately, noting that lawmakers are already more than halfway through the legislative session.
This is my day one, so there's a lot to catch up on, and it's an honor to be here to represent District 38 and the friends and family and the communities that I've come to know and love since my youth. So it's a great honor to stand, especially on the shoulders of giants and the women that have come before me, the Alaska Native women that have come before me.
Zilkuski is Yupik and a former mayor of Bethel. She served as vice president of communications for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. It's the first time this year that the Alaska legislature has had its full complement of 60 members. Zilkuski is one of 19 women in the current legislature, the highest number in Alaska history. She says she'll be looking to get up to speed on different issues, including revising the legislature's sexual harassment policy.
There's a lot of history of women and women in leadership positions in our state, and that number continues to grow. I think that that brings a really powerful perspective on issues related to sexual assault and harassment, and is a really important perspective when you're having dialogues around policy and how that can be implemented.
Zilkuski replaces Zach Fansler, who resigned after a woman alleged he slapped her in his hotel room in January. She'll be the co-chair of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee and the vice chair of the House Health and Social Services Committee. A bill to declare a state of emergency for Alaska Native languages has advanced in the State House. As KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports, in public testimony, the bill saw widespread support from Alaska Native academics, tribal members, and non-Native Alaskans as well.
The House Community and Regional Affairs Committee passed the resolution after 2 days of public testimony Thursday.
Good morning, honorable representatives of the state of Alaska. My name is Khone Lance Twitchell. I am an assistant professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast and a council member of the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. I will begin my testimony in my language and will translate.
Twitchell and the Language Advisory Council, in a report at the beginning of the year, said that not only are a majority of the 20 recognized Alaska Native languages in danger of being lost at the end of this century, but direct action is needed on a legislative level. Along with nearly 30 people testifying, not including numerous written comments, Twitchell wanted to share accounts left by elders.
It is hard for us to hear, and I assure you the reason I share it is not to make anyone feel guilty. But this testimony must include the suffering of our elders and ancestors. This is a real thing and must not be transformed into a metaphor or minimized into tough choices or the ways that things had to be.
Twitchell then recounted survivor stories of 20th century Alaska Native boarding schools, with one tribal elder recalling being doused with kerosene and other methods used at the time to discourage the use of indigenous languages and cultural practices for generations of Alaska Native peoples. Some wanted to tell the committee what sort of actions ought to follow the declaration, from building upon successful models of language programs such as immersion schools to creating a statewide Alaska Native school board for, quote, Alaska Native tribal and charter schools. The resolution was also amended. Representative Dan Sadler wanted to stress how important language is to Alaska Native culture as a whole. He also wanted to add language about urgency.
But I want to explicitly say that we should call for fast action. I think it behooves us to say that the state agencies and the governor and the legislature and the Native Language Preservation Advisory Council should work expeditiously.
HCR 19, sponsored by Representative Dan Ortez, will now go to the House Rules Committee. Should it later pass a House vote, Senator Donald Olson, according to Representative Ortez's staff, would introduce it in the Senate. In Bethel, I'm Christine Trudeau.
The governor's office plans to meet with leaders from Bethel and the nearby village of Neposkiac to discuss the impact that legal alcohol sales in Bethel are having on the region. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis has more.
The idea of a meeting was the governor's response to a resolution issued by Neposkiac's tribal council this week, which urged Governor Walker to declare a state of emergency in their region. According to tribal council members, having a legal liquor store in Bethel has led to an increase in alcohol-related deaths in their village that they compared to the state's opioid crisis. Tribal Administrator Sharon Williams says that 5 Neposkiac residents have died in alcohol-related incidents since Bethel legalized alcohol sales in May 2016. That's a little over 1% of the village's total population. Williams says she hasn't heard from the governor's office yet. Governor Walker's press secretary, Austin Baird, said that the governor's office plans to iron out the details of a meeting between Bethel and Neposkiac leaders within the next 2 weeks.
There's been a lot of attention to the opioid epidemic, and that certainly is an enormous challenge and an enormous issue, but certainly alcohol has been a constant issue. I mean, it's a very painful and complicated issue, and that I would expect would be part of the conversation.
Baird added that questions surrounding Bethel's liquor store specifically should be addressed at a community level. Inspired by the Neposkiac Tribal Council, the Village of Marshall issued its own resolution this afternoon, urging Governor Walker to declare a state of emergency in their community too. Tribal Administrator Nick Andrew claims Bethel's liquor store has contributed to an increase in alcohol-related crime in Marshall, but he says the real issue is the village has no way of coping with it. Beyond occasional visits from state troopers, Marshall hasn't had a police force or any other law enforcement in over a decade.
You know, we have a generation of children being born, and they have no idea what a police department is. You all take police officers for granted. And once it's taken away, there's an uneasiness that envelops any given community.
Andrew claims that state budget cuts mean Marshall can no longer afford law enforcement. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a self-proclaimed shaman from California ruffles feathers in Juneau.
We are not adverse to people wanting to seek a religious enlightenment, but we do not believe in the exploitation of our spiritual beliefs.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
In villages across Alaska, schools are often the beating hearts of rural communities. Schools aren't just for education. They also often provide the only basketball courts and meeting halls around. And in the Kodiak Archipelago, at least half the region's villages face losing their schools. Over the last decade, the Kodiak Island Borough School District student population has shrunk by about 200 kids. And that's hit the region's rural communities especially hard. This year, the district closed its school in Danger Bay because of low enrollment, and it's almost certainly going to have to do the same for the communities of Port Lyons and Carlick this coming school year. But the village of Larson Bay is in a particularly precarious spot. As KMXT's Mitch Borden reports, the loss of just one student could shut it down.
As you walk into the Larson Bay School, some of the faces that make up the community's history are there to greet you.
Look at this wall. This has elders. All the elders, you know, that contributed to how this place was built and grown. I mean, Where else do you have that?
Sherry Harms points to the photos with admiration. She's lived in Larson Bay since the early 2000s and is on its city council. Harms says the community has been shrinking for a while, and right now there's only about 60 full-time residents. In the summer, the community's population swells because of commercial salmon fishermen and cannery workers who show up for the salmon season. But Harms says those people don't really contribute much to the community.
Essentially, we're turning into a summer village.
The town needs at least 10 students enrolled in its school next fall to keep it open. If it's short, the Kodiak Island School District will lose about $300,000 in state funding, and it will close the school. The school's current count is 11 students, but one is graduating. So the community has no wriggle room. If one more student leaves, that's it. Residents with and without kids are anxiously waiting to see what will happen. Harms says she doesn't blame any parent considering leaving town.
They don't want to have the school year start, and then all of a sudden there's no teacher, no classes or anything, and they want to plan ahead.
We need to keep everyone here. We need to reassure them that school will be open. The decision of one person could sink us, and that's a scary thought.
Alice Aga is the mayor of Larson Bay. She's dedicated to keeping the school open, but she's not very optimistic about the community's future.
I think if the school closed, it really would be like the final blow to Larson Bay that, you know, we're really a dying community.
Larson Bay's population has been shrinking for decades, and Aga, who was born and raised here, thinks that's partly because the outside world is so enticing.
The kids that grow up, they don't want to come back to the village because there's nothing here for them. They want to go live in Kodiak or Anchorage, Seattle, you know, go to college and then stay there. They don't want to come back because they like going to the mall. They like going to the theater. They like going to the grocery store, you know, and there's none of that here.
In the Kodiak region, students in rural schools don't have the same opportunities as students in more populated areas. Their class sizes can be tiny, and some kids have to take distance learning courses that don't always allow them to connect with their instructors or peers. Even though Aga wants the Larson Bay School to stay open, she recently sent her oldest daughter to live with relatives in the city of Kodiak to go to middle school because Aga wasn't satisfied with the quality of education her daughter was receiving at the village's school. Aga's conflicted about this choice. On one hand, she's happy her daughter is enjoying her new school. On the other, she's worried that if the Larson Bay School closes, the town will pretty much become a retirement home.
You know, the elders, they'll be the last ones here.
In Aga's mind, that will be the death of Larson Bay, and that haunts her.
I've cried thinking about this so many times that I just feel like I'm all dried up. I can't cry about it anymore.
The district superintendent made a pledge to community members at a recent meeting that he'll do everything he can for Larson Bay. He said right now he's moving forward as if the Larson Bay School is staying open. But if there are fewer than 10 students next fall, the district will have to move fast to close the school. The Kodiak Island Borough, which owns all the district's current school sites, is in the process of exploring ways communities that lose their schools can still use the buildings. Because around Kodiak, schools aren't just schools. They're the center of communities. In Larson Bay, I'm Mitch Borden.
Bad weather is hitting a crucial stretch of the Iditarod Trail along the Yukon River, and that's throwing a wrench into the plans of some of the top teams. One critical checkpoint is all but shut down, and teams are reconsidering their strategies as they figure out where they'll take their mandatory rest on the way to the coast. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes is on the line from the checkpoint in Anvik. And Zach, tell us what's going on out there.
So in Anvik, very little is going on. The big story here is that bad weather has closed down the checkpoint at Eagle Island. And what that means is that they can't fly supplies in or out reliably. And so judges with the Iditarod have said that the mandatory 8-hour rest mushers are required to take at one of the checkpoints along the river cannot be taken at Eagle Island. They'll have some of the bare essentials for mushers to get by, but no straw, no food, no dog food, no drop bags full of supplies. And in effect said, you can't take your 8-hour rest here, so you got to take it somewhere else. And that's changing up the strategies for a lot of the top mushers as they figure out where to most effectively rest their teams to keep up speeds and rebuild some of their strength.
So what does this mean at this point in the race? Is this good for some mushers and not for others?
Right now, this is good for Nicolas Petit. Nick did a 79-mile run from Iditarod, blasted through Shagaluk, and got to Anvik quite early this morning. It's 5:21, give or take. And he just declared his eight-hour rest right away before hearing any of this news that came down later in the day about Eagle Island being closed. So Nick is coming off his required eight-hour rest with a presumably recharged dog team. The other two main contenders at the front are Mitch Seavey and Jorlisa Olsen, and they got the news about the checkpoint being shut down a little bit later on, and you know they hadn't taken their eight-hour rest yet. So if they were planning on taking it at Eagle Island, which is a fair assumption given how they've been running and resting their teams, that was just taken off the table.
So is this a big change for these mushers? Is this a big wrench in their plans?
You know, we're going to see. That's the big question right now is how much does this affect the top three teams and then, you know, jockeying for top 10, top 15, top 20.
And as we're headed into the weekend, you know, what are you watching for over the next couple of days?
Well, the next couple of days are crucial. What I'm watching for is how people look in Caltag and how they're positioned there. That's the last checkpoint along the Yukon River. It's where, you know, by that point you haven't taken your eight-hour rest, you've got to do it there. If mushers push their dogs a little bit too hard earlier in the Yukon, that's where we're going to start to see teams slow down, be a little stickier. As they cross that portage between Caltag and Unalakleet, that's really going to dictate a lot of the positioning heading to the coast.
And when do we expect the first mushers to reach Nome?
Man, if I had a exact answer for that, I'd be a richer man. The fast precedent holds the first musher will reach Nome between Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning. This race has been a little bit slower than some of the more recent ones, but the southern route hasn't been run since 2013, so we'll see.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Zach, and stay warm out there.
Thank you.
That's Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes on the Iditarod Trail in Anvik. Wildlife are a common sighting on the Iditarod, and sometimes they have chance encounters with mushers. Perhaps most notable was the 2016 incident between a wood bison and Didi Janro. Now, in this year's Iditarod, one more musher can say they've tangled with the ungulates. Marcel Fresino's run-in came somewhere between Roan and Nikolai. Fresino says she was scared. She hadn't seen any tracks, and the bison caught her off guard. So, to protect her dogs and herself, she grabbed the only tool she had.
So I took my axe, and I run to the bigger one, and because I know that's dangerous to approach the young one. And I yell, "Go away, go away," and they go in the bush after.
The veteran musher from Whitehorse says she's encountered moose on the trail before, but not bison. Fresino left Takatna this morning after finishing her 24-hour layover.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating more than 40 years of Alaska operations.
Never miss another episode of your favorite PBS primetime programs thanks to Afternoon Tea on Alaska Public Media TV. Every weekday, you can catch up on the drama of Masterpiece. Be amazed by our universe with nature and Nova. Search for garage treasures on Antiques Roadshow and solve mysteries alongside our favorite detectives. Watch Afternoon Tea weekdays from 3 to 5 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, the business of shamanism. A retreat in Juneau led by a Californian has caught Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's attention. SHI recently learned about the Dance of the Deer Foundation's retreat and asked them not to come to Juneau. Despite Sea Alaska Heritage's objections, the company's owner and self-proclaimed shaman, Brent Secunda, continues to advertise for the June trip. KTOO's Scott Burton has more.
This music is from a promotional Dance of the Deer video called Alaska, A Living Dream. The company's owner, Brant Secunda, wears his signature dark felted cowboy hat as he leads his clients through Juneau. They're sitting on a beach with the Chilkat Mountains in the distance, hiking and visiting Nugget Falls at the Mendenhall Glacier. Here's Secunda from Shamanism TV, another video on his website.
By going on a shamanic journey into the Nerika, you find your life and you find your connection to a hidden universe, or to what we might say the sky world, or we might say you feel a connection to Mother Earth and all that lives on Mother Earth.
While he's originally from New Jersey, Secunda journeyed to Mexico, Carlos Castaneda-like, when he was 18 and met a man named Don Jose Matsua. Secunda says a 12-year apprenticeship followed. According to his advertisements, the 9-day retreat will be the 24th annual in Alaska, but it just hit Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's radar a few weeks ago. Since then, SHI President Rosita Wuerl sent Secunda two letters, one asking them not to come here, and...
We also, you know, are not adverse to people wanting to seek religious enlightenment or teachings. We absolutely support that, but we do not believe in the exploitation of our spiritual beliefs and our practices. Our shamans go on a spiritual quest. They acquire spirits. Those spirits then help the shaman protect the welfare of their clan.
Charging for shamanistic practices is where Wuerl says the exploitation comes in. Dance of the Deer is charging up to $3,865 for the retreat. In a recent letter responding to SHI from Dance of the Deer's management team, they cite Juneau's cost of living as an explanation for the high price and add that some years it loses money. Their website says proceeds from all their activities go to Secunda's mentor's people, the Huichols. Dance of the Deer would not provide documentation to verify this or make Secunda or anyone with the organization available for interview. And we couldn't find public tax documents showing that Dance of the Deer Foundation is a foundation in the sense of an IRS-recognized tax-exempt charity. However, a filing with the Santa Cruz County Clerk identifies Dance of the Deer Foundation as a business alias for Secunda, meaning he is the sole owner.
We don't need someone like him to speak on behalf of ourselves.
Silao Valadez is a yarn painter from the region in Mexico where Secunda says he learned about shamanism. He uses the indigenous name of his people, Wirrarica, rather than the colonial name, Huichol, and he comes from a lineage of medicine people, what some call shamans.
I know that a lot of the people that might have the right intentions to go to these ceremonies, you know, we need people that are conscious about this knowledge, and we need people to learn this knowledge. But I think it has to be on a proper way where the people, which is us, that are direct descendants of this tradition, should have a voice and not have someone that is just dressed up like us trying to represent us.
In addition to a non-Indigenous person appropriating his culture, he agrees with Rosita Wuerl about exploitation. Among locations in the Bahamas, Patagonia, New Zealand, Greece, and Italy, Secunda continues to advertise his June retreat in Juneau and has not responded to SHI's latest letter. And if Secunda does come?
I don't know. I suspect, you know, there'll be people who will want to picket or whatever you call that, demonstrate outside of that place. I don't think that I would do that. I can't anymore. I've got a bum knee for one thing.
For AK, I'm Scott Burton.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Richard Hensley in Kotzebue. Hensley lives in an assisted living facility now, but he used to live with his sister and brother-in-law.
Kotzebue, I was born and raised around here 68 years ago. I couldn't lie about my age. Yeah, I would, you know, before I ended up in this facility, we were living in a trailer. I woke up, I hollered, anybody home? Nobody home. Hot cup of coffee on a table. I picked it up. Then my brother-in-law Ron, he wrote me a note. I picked it up. I put my coffee down. I read that note. Uncle Richard, I had to rush your younger sister to the hospital. As soon as I saw that hospital part, I dropped that note and I forgot all about my coffee. Out the door I went. I got so excited, I ran out with just my slippers and no jacket. Then my younger sister, Beverly, she told my brother and I, Ron, she said, babe, say what? Did you write your brother-in-law a note? I wrote him a note. He was just sleeping, babe. I said, well, my youngest says, well, you better go check on him. He's probably awake. I got about halfway between the hospital from our trailer. Then I saw a car coming down the road. I said, oh, gee, here comes my brother-in-law. So I stopped. Sure enough, it was him. He said, Uncle Richard. I said, what, Ron? He said, where's your jacket and shoes? Cap. I looked at myself and said, I woke up and I hollered for you. I said, everybody home? Nobody answered me. You wrote me a note. That's what got me all riled up. Yeah, that's when my youngest sister Beverly had my niece Judy right on the 7th of January, right on my birthday.
Richard Hensley lives in Kotzebue. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Scott Burton and Ann Hillman. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Christine Trudeau and Teresa Katsourilis in Bethel, Mitch Borden in Kodiak, and Zachariah Hughes and Davis Hovey on the Iditarod Trail. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Rachel Waltholz. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting March 14th and 15th starting at 9 a.m. at the AVCP Regional Housing Authority Conference Room in Bethel. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.